The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.
Hello and welcome to The Common Good. This is Hannah Floor, and I am here with three members of the crew of the Hokulea. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Aloha, my name is Mark Ellis. I'm from Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm currently the captain on this leg of the voyage with Hokulea.
Hi, my name is Tua Pittman, and I'm from the island of Rarotonga in the Cook Islands, and I'm a traditional navigator.
Aloha, my name is Kai Hoshijo. I'm from Oahu, Hawaii, and I'm a volunteer crew member on board Hokulea for this journey.
Thanks for being here. So the Hokulea came into Petersburg, and you came down the Wrangell Narrows into the South Harbor, and then there was a sort of back and forth in the South Harbor on the dock. And I was wondering if you could talk about what that protocol was and why you do it the way that you do.
Okay, yeah, so we came into Wrangell Narrows, and as we came in, there were fires lit along the seashore, and there are people waving us in. And once we got to the dock and to the harbor, we went into more of a formal protocol. And the first thing that happened after we got tied up and we were secured was the crew did a chant. And this chant was to announce who we were and where we came from. And it was done in Olelo Hawaii, or in the Hawaiian language. Once that chant was done, then the Alaskan natives then responded with a few words, and then they translated that into English. And the English that came back was, "Who are you and where are you from?" And then that's when we responded in English for all to understand that, you know, who we are. We're the crew of Hokulea. Where did we come from? We came from across the sea, from Hawaii. And then they asked, you know, what is your purpose? And our response was to engage and to learn their ways. And then also to ask for permission to go upon the lands and then also go upon the waterways.
And is that a similar protocol that happens all around the world, wherever you go?
Yes, it is. In our culture, in the Pacific Ocean, as much as the Pacific Ocean, the Mauna Nui Akea is huge, is expansive, the cultures are pretty similar. The languages are very similar. And we have a culture of memorizing our genealogies, and we can go back and we can trace generations back through chant and oratory. So the purpose of this is when a canoe arrives on an island, the people of the land ask, "Who are you?" So you recite your genealogy, you tell them who you are, and you go back through the generations. Somewhere along that line of genealogy, the people of the land can connect to a person and say, "Your family, welcome." And, you know, it's, for me, it's so fulfilling that we're still doing that now. Just connecting the genealogy of, one, our people, connecting it to the people of the land, and honoring our canoe and ancestors. And it's pretty powerful.
So you had said that you were asked, "Who are you and why are you here? Why are you here? What is your goal with this voyage?"
So we're here to engage with the community. We're here to learn from the community. We're here to be a light with the community, to share their stories and share how their knowledge and their practices are important. when we learn things from these smaller communities as we travel down Southeast Alaska, you know, 75% of the meals that they would provide us was gathered, sustainable. Moose, the fish, the halibut, the salmon, the herbs. For me, I'm from Honolulu, where, you know, if the ship stopped coming in or the plane stopped coming in, you know, we could run out of food within a week. And so that's one example of some of the things that we can learn from. But it's also sharing with them some of our experiences. So the goal is really to engage with these communities, highlight them, and then also share that knowledge back and forth.
We grow up on islands, and everything is relative to that island space. And you don't take care of your island, the island's not going to take care of you. When we look at the Earth, we don't see, because we're islanders, we don't see the Earth as being a planet. We see it as an island. And you care for that island, that island will care for you. And we use that same metaphor for our canoe as well. Our canoe is an island. You take care of that canoe or that island, you have the crew members that are the community, and you have the leadership, the captain and the navigator. They're the administration. The administration works with that community to keep that canoe safe. Now, if you take that metaphor and relate it to an island, the island is now the canoe, and the community are the crew members, and government are the navigators and the captains of that island. If they all work together in unison, that island survives. So we take that message out with us wherever we go and say, you take care of your island, because then your island's going to take care of you. And we loved it being here in Alaska because you see it. We sat in Angoon for 5 days, and every day people would go out fishing, and they pride themselves in the way that they're able to come back and provide for their families. The herring eggs and the seaweed and the we had one lady that was with us, and she would just pick up different herbs and plants and say, you can eat this, and this is good for this, and this is good for that. If you mash this up and mix it with something else, it provides some medicinal property for your body. Wow, Alaska, you're awesome. And we, as much as we come to share, we take away a lot as well through these memories.
Yeah, I think going back to protocol, like that knowledge exchange is really important. Sharing your genealogy and also honoring your ancestors and recognizing that, oh, you know, we have very much a common bond in that practice. And going off of what Uncle Tuo was talking about, really appreciating the amount of knowledge that there is. And so when we do go home, there's a lot of inspiration there for going back into our communities and seeking out that knowledge and trying to understand how can we facilitate that fabric, you know, in our own communities. So on the canoe, on the ocean, in the exploration, in the exchange, but also back home, in our places that we want to provide for and we want to care for. There's a lot of caretaking, I think, involved as one of the main themes.
As a student navigator, can you tell me a little bit about the methods of navigation, traditional navigation that you use?
Sure. Essentially, when we're training or when we go on voyages, we are told by our teachers and kind of given this responsibility to observe. And so you're looking specifically at sunrise and sunset, really important times of the day. You're looking for change. You're looking for different signals that are pinging at you out in nature. You're looking for the wind, the waves, the patterns in all of it, the birds, and the celestial bodies, the stars, the moon, the sun. So sunrise and sunset, you're lining up the canoe compass, and the canoe compass is representative of the Hawaiian star compass and actually all the star compasses in Waianae Kea, which essentially is a 360-degree plane, your horizon, with 32 star houses. And the stars themselves, we like to say, live in those houses. And so there are markings on the canoe that are not labeled. And so as the canoe moves and as the conditions change and your direction moves or your tracking moves, your job as a student navigator is to try your best to study that movement.
Navigation is 80% observation and 20% knowledge. The 20% of knowledge is deep knowledge of the names of stars and where they rise from and where they sit. And it's understanding what the swells are doing. It's a complex way of finding direction. And in your mind, you're calculating the speed of the canoe. You're looking at how the wind is acting on the canoe. Which part of the canoe or which part of the ocean is the rain coming from? How is it past us, and what does it signify? The rainbows, or what side of the canoe they're on. So there's a lot of these things. And then if we don't see the stars, then we use the swells that act on the canoe to help us keep the canoe in the right direction. So the navigation is a whole process of this, getting from A to B.
So you're talking about the 80% observation versus 20% knowledge. I'm curious what it feels like to be in that state of observation and how it feels different to be out on the water versus your life at home.
I mean, when we're out at sea and you can't see land, the distractions are not there. It's very much a space where it's a space like no other. You are not necessarily alone, but you are looking for things in your kind of mind and your sight and your feel and your senses that is your own in that way. But you're also a part of the canoe, you're also a part of the crew. And that space is not lonely, it's you're looking at these things and you're interacting with them by observing them. And so there's a kind of a sense of belonging, a sense of being present and at ease with knowing that you're there, and you're there for those reasons.
When I'm on the ocean, it's peaceful for me, even though there's storms or different things that are coming up. For me, it's kind of a peaceful feeling. I tend to slow things down on the ocean. I tend to be more observant of nature. And so it's really peaceful where I can focus in on certain things. And those things are important. And because they're important, I focus in on them even more.
On these voyaging canoes, we have two spots that are reserved for the navigator. And they're right on the stern of the canoe, on the port and starboard side. And this is where we spend 95% of our time, just sitting in that position and watching everything that's going on around you. And it can be very difficult, but very satisfying at the same time, because you sit there, you're trying to align the star compass that we have on the canoe with the star compass that you have in your mind that is set on the horizon. And for the navigator, sometimes it can be very lonely, because the crew members could be off telling jokes or talking story or making the food or sitting around playing ukulele and guitar, singing songs. As much as you sing along with these songs, your mind still has to be on that role of directing the canoe and keeping it on course 24/7. So it's a very, very satisfying position to be in, to be able to guide this and to watch these heavenly bodies come and go, knowing that, okay, got up in this house, it's going to go and sit on this on the corresponding house across the side, and it's like looking at a road map. You know that it's going to wake up on a certain street at a certain address, and it's going to set at a corresponding address across the way, and it's very satisfying.
You were talking about the loneliness. I'm curious, what are some of the toughest times out on the Hokulea?
I think for me, the toughest time that I faced on the canoes was my first voyage. And my first voyage was from Tahiti to Hawaii. I was young and naive, and they said, "Do you want to go?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" I really didn't know what I was getting myself into completely. I trained, I was training, but I didn't fully know everything. So partial was just going in blind. And that was a tough one because, I heard stories, and those stories were coming true, that the first couple days are really difficult. The first 5 days or so were, you're making that transition from land to ocean life. And then for me, after the sixth day, every day felt like the same day. I was a crew member, and I would wake up, do my watch, eat, finish my watch, sleep, wake up, do my watch, sleep, and I just started repeating that same over and over. And you start not even knowing what day of the week it is, and it's really just knowing that, okay, we're halfway there at the equator, right? And so, okay, we know we're halfway home, but then you get to the equator, and the equator, the winds just stop, and now you're sitting there for a couple days. We were there for only a couple days. There were other people that were stuck there for like a week or so or longer. And it's just hot during the day. And at night, the rain just comes straight down on you and just pelts you. And you're cold as cold can be, just wishing it was warm. And then the sun comes up and it's hotter than hot can be. And you're wishing that it was cold. And so going through these emotions, that was a big eye-opener for me, was that first deep-sea voyage that took 17 days to cross.
So why did you do it again?
I asked myself that same question over and over. Why do I do it again? Sometimes I have really nice legs or voyages, and sometimes I have really difficult ones. And I go home and I tell my wife, "I'm not going to go out again on a deep one. Remember to tell me that." But my wife always forgets to tell me. She always forgets. And I must have short-term memory loss. But I keep going out. And I think it's for being part of something bigger than myself. And I voyage for my grandchildren's grandchildren. I voyage for them so that they never have to learn about voyaging again from a book or from a video. I voyage so that navigation never goes extinct.
As a navigator, you're met with a lot of challenges, and you have to be able to manage them. The navigator doesn't sleep much. It's got to be up almost 24/7, with little cat naps in between every 2 to 3 hours, have the opportunity to get some sleep. That's one of the challenges, But it's so satisfying when you just have that 10 to 15 minute cat nap. You wake up so empowered, and you, even though you're sleeping, you're, in your mind, you're still navigating. And then you get the challenging times of, for me, the most challenging time is between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. in the morning, where your body's pushed to the limit. It could be raining, it could be cold, it could be hot, but you're having to deal with the different conditions that affect your body. And, you know, we're all human. Certain things affect your body, it's going to affect your mind, and then you've got a role to play in this whole equation of voyaging. So you have to be focused. So I try to stay awake during that period of time, and there have been times when I start to nod off, and in your mind you start to hear voices, and it's not the crew members. It's I saw it as being the ancestors coming and saying, hey, stay awake. And I just kept seeing all these faces in the ocean, different faces but the same eyes. This is in my mind, was playing on me at the time. I thought, oh, these are my family. They have the same eyes. And then, you know, it just makes me stronger. I stay awake through that period. And then you look across at the star compass on your canoe and you see the sunrise exactly where it's supposed to be. And that satisfaction of having withstood this whole 24-hour period of staying awake and keeping the canoe on a good course, you know, it becomes very satisfying. And so the sun comes up, and then you go, okay, we do it all over again.
What has surprised you most about this particular trip through Alaska?
I think the one thing that, I don't want to say surprised me, but the one thing that I noticed is that how the Pacific Islanders and the native people of Alaska are so similar. So similar in the sense that the value of the elders of our, in our community, in our family is so important. And the value of the land and our resources, our natural resources, are so important. It's those similarities that really kind of open my eyes even wider to know that we're one people. You know, we come from one ocean, we're ocean going people, and we're the same. And just learning the stories about our Alaskan natives and their voyaging traditions. We know that the cultures up here are 10, you know, 12, 15,000 years old. Where our culture, for me, from Hawaii, is only 2,000 years old at the oldest on those islands. So we're a young culture compared to 10,000 years.
Maybe I wouldn't say like what surprised me the most, but what I've been able to take away from being here is the love and the care that these people have for one another and for us. I mean, I was amazed in the way that we were taken in and were able to be in this space with really what I think is our family now. You know, I know that we're now family. And the way that everyone danced together, and they're dancing for one another, and they're dancing for their ancestors, and there's no shame, regardless of fear or regardless of difficulties that I think Native people face everywhere, that we can definitely, you know, relate to. There's no shame in saying that, no, we're gonna sing loud, and we're gonna dance, and we're gonna dance all together. And that, to me, is something, that's what stood out to me in every place we've gone to, is just that love and care for culture and who you are. and it's inspiring, so inspiring. And I have so much respect for that.
I mean, before I came to Alaska, I had no idea what the people were going to be like and what the culture was all about and how they revered their culture and how they... And that was one thing that, you know, I took to heart, just coming into these communities and seeing how much they love to share. You know, in our islands, when canoes arrived on the beach, it was all about caring for the people that just arrived after a long voyage, making sure they have a roof over their heads, making sure that they're fed well. And my goodness, Alaska's feeding us well. I've never tried so many delicacies in my life. Different ways of preparing the salmon and the halibut and then the deer and the it's just so heartwarming. And then, you know, our master navigator Nainoa Thompson and president of the Polynesian Voyaging Society, he came up with an observation of his own when we were in Juneau, and when the native people, when they dance their dances and sing their songs, it's not just the adults, it's everybody. And the children, they hold the children close to their heart and they're singing and dancing with them, and it's almost drummed into the child that by the time they're able to walk, they're performing. And that was so empowering, you know, just to see that. And you know, Alaska is gonna—it's gonna be a lasting memory for me because of how they're able to manage their natural resources, not just in terms of forests, but food, language, and family ways. It's just been really, really. Special.
Well, thank you so much for coming in to talk with me today, and thank you so much for coming to Alaska and bringing all of the joy and knowledge that you've brought with you.
Yeah, it's been an honor, and it's been so satisfying. I never ever thought, I mean, I've done a lot of deep sea ocean voyaging and been overwhelmed with the challenges and the protocols of voyaging, but you come here and it blows me out of the water. And thank you, Alaska.
Yep, definitely. Big thank you and mahalo to Alaska and for the people and all that they've taught us, that they taught me. I will always remember this and cherish it. And as we say in Hawaii, we say ahui ho, which is until we meet again, never a goodbye.
Mahalo nui, Alaska, and it's just been an amazing experience, and we will be back. This is a relationship, and it's a family that we will continue to cherish and support one another. So I'll see you again. Ahuiho.
The Common Good on KFSK is brought to you by the Petersburg Community Foundation, an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation. The Petersburg Community Foundation is devoted to improving the lives of the young, the elderly, and vulnerable populations, as well as creating recreation, education, and safety programs. The Petersburg Community Foundation, making grants to local nonprofits through a permanent endowment. More information at petersburgcf.org.